At this time, I would like to introduce our second speaker from South Potomac area, Reggie.
Whoa. I do want to thank South Potomac, the convention, for asking me to share my experience, strength, and help, hope today. Thank you, Pat, for setting the pace. It just makes it a little bit easier. We were talking about how, you know, nervous we both were and everything, and and it was good, you know. So, same here, you know. Just listening to Pat share and just been meditating and thinking about my story, because here too, that's all I have is my story, you know, and the brokenness. You know, the brokenness. You know, I start off by thinking about, first of all, where I'm at today. And that's the interesting thing about my process and this journey. And that is that I am engaged to be married. I am adopting, as a single man, I'm adopting two boys, raising my biological daughter, and sponsoring people, have a sponsor, and a sponsor who has a sponsor who's here. I have a network, and they are all helping me to work through this process. You know, all of them are helping me to work through this process. You know, when I start back and thinking about, you know, where the actual fracture happened, you know, and for me, it goes back to when I was a kid. You know, it goes back to when I was a child. 7 years old, I remember rubbing with, my mother babysitted for some of the kids in the neighborhood, families in the neighborhood. My father worked. So my mother was a stay-at-home mom, so she kind of helped out in the neighborhood. And it was a family up the street from us, grew up in Riggs Park in D.C. And my mother was babysitting, and one of the girls, I was seven, and she was probably about six, you know, we started rubbing, you know, experimenting, you know. And then the next day, her brother and I, we're rubbing, you know. And for me, I was excited and I enjoyed that at seven, and it continued throughout my adolescence. I always had a girl and I always had a boy. It was always throughout my teenage years and all of that. And I remember, and because of the family I came from, I remember, you know, the routines and the things that were going on in our family and our household. I remember how, you know, on Sundays after church, we would all get together in my father's convertible, and we would go riding down Haynes Point. And I remember hearing him listening to Petey Green's Washington on the radio and stuff like that. And I remember hearing him tell stories about, we know they'd ride by and they'd see a drag queen or somebody who was gay. They would talk about, ooh, those faggots, you know. And I remember how my mother used to talk about how my uncle, her brother, used to jump out the car and beat up faggots on the street. And they would all laugh about it. Ha, 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 ha. And I internalized all of that. And I was like, oh, my God, that's me. So right away at that moment, that's where the fracture began for me. And I learned how to lie. I learned how to live a lie. In front of them and in front of everybody around me, I was Reggie, the good son, and all of that. But when nobody else was around, I became what was natural and what was the secret for me. It was a secret, you know? And as I grew up, I never even put it together until I started, you know, to do step work and things like that, because that's where the fracture, how the you know, the rebuilding happens, is through step work. You know, why I like shows like Batman and I Dream a Genie and Bewitched and all that, because they all had two different lives. They had the one that people in their inner circle got to see and know. And then they had the one that they put on, the mask, in front of everybody else. And I used to love those shows. And there would be times in my life when I couldn't fit in. And I was trying to fit in. And I couldn't do it. And I'm talking about all this stuff is before drugs and alcohol. All this is before the drugs and the alcohol. You know, and just trying to live a lie. You know, trying to go to the go-go's and trying to fit in. You know, trying not, just want to be loved. Just want to be accepted. Because my own family, you know, they sent the subtle messages that who you are ain't good enough. And that was hurtful for me, you know. And I remember, you know, even all the way through high school and everything. And I remember going to my high school prom. And the girl that I went with was somebody, you know, I was in love with. I was 17 years old, you know, and I loved her, you know, as much as a 17-year-old can love, you know. And I remember she was living in Southview Apartments, and I went over during the summer before I was going away to college to visit. And when I went over to visit, you know, her people said, go ahead on in. I went in and I went upstairs to her bedroom door and knocked on the door and nobody answered. And I went in and she was laying on the floor getting screwed by another guy. Another split in the fracture for me. I made a conscious decision to only date men after that because I could not stand the pain. I couldn't do it anymore. And so that's what I did. I went off to college, and now I don't have the oversight of my family. I can be whoever I want to be. I can do whatever I want to do. And I get to start all over again with a whole campus full of people who don't know me. And I remember on the dorm, and the guys were all getting together, and they wanted to go down. And 17 years old, and, you know, they wanted to start drinking, and, you know, they probably already was, but for me at 17, you know, I'm right there with them because it was about fitting in at this point, you know what I'm saying? And so we drank and had fun and, you know, and all this kind of stuff, and I'm really fitting in. I'm a part of the crowd now, and I'm liking it, but don't none of them know what's really going on with me is I'm really kind of spying y'all out to see which one of y'all at night I can use, you know, which one, you know. And of course, I found out which one it was, and it was all right because it was mutual in my mind, you know, and all of that stuff, you know. And my second year of college, I met somebody from D.C., you know, came down and, you know, and it was, he showed me, he introduced me to the gay lifestyle, you know. And for me, it was a whole society that accepted me and embraced me. I didn't have to do nothing extra. I didn't have to be nothing extra. You are all right just like you are. Wow. So that was all right with me, you know, until got graduated from college, came back home, and I got afraid of the whole AIDS epidemic, and I ran up into the church for a safe place for me where I met the woman who was my first wife. And I married her. But she wanted to, before we got married, I did tell her that I had had sexual relationships with guys before that point. I did tell her that. So she asked me to make sure that before, you know, you get married, you make sure you go and get tested. Because I want to know, because, you know, the AIDS epidemic was crazy in the 80s, and stuff. People dying left and right. She wanted to make sure I was tested. So I went up on Georgia Avenue between Kenyon and Irving. There was this little place, and on this door it said HIV testing, and on this door it said premarital testing. So you know which door I went to? The premarital testing.
Go ahead, old boy.
So, after I got the results, I skipped back to her and went, "Woo, we good to go." And next year, in about February of the following year, after we're married, she's now in Okinawa in Japan. At the time, she was in Japan. I had gone over and spent some time with her. I knew before I got there that she wanted to work on having a baby. And I was excited about having a baby with her, you know, my wife and everything. And so we got there. We worked on having a baby. I came back home. And in February, I got a call from my doctor. And he wanted me to come up to Walter Reed and meet with him. And he told me that I was HIV positive. And I was devastated. I was devastated. And then I got a call from my wife and in Japan. And she called me, and she was so excited. And we were on the phone, long distance. She was on one, and we were going, who's going to go first? I told her I got some bad news. She said, I got some good news. We went back and forth about who's going to go first. All right? I let her go first. I'm pregnant. And she said, and we were, and I'm standing up, oh God. She said, okay, what do you got to tell me? I'm positive. In the same conversation. And I'm talking about a fractured personality. I'm talking about being broken and just stuff. It's just piling on top of stuff and all of that. And she was willing to work through it. Today, she's HIV negative. Today, my daughter's HIV negative. But I could not deal with the hurt and the pain that I brought to my marriage and my family. Because that's one of the things I found out in my fourth step, is that I love my family. And I love the people that I love. You know, and now that I had brought this destruction to my family, I had to run. So what did I do? I went right back out to the gay club. And I drank and I drugged until I just didn't have to feel what I didn't want to feel no more. I just didn't want to feel no more because it hurt too much. It hurt too much. And I hit bottom, you know, in 1999, I hit bottom. And no, that's not true. In 1999, I was sent to the rooms. And because it took me a minute to get it right. You know, it took me a minute. And I do today still have, you know, sympathy for those people who struggle with getting it in the beginning, you know. And I finally got it. You know, I finally got it. And a sponsor who walked me through the steps and helped me to get to know who I am. And, you know, in that fourth step where it talks about working through the confusion and the contradiction in your life. And, you know, I heard early on in my recovery when they said that it was an inside job, you know, and I didn't know what that meant, but I know that that was for me because I was the person who came into the rooms. When I showed up, I had a car, I had a job, I had a company car, executive, but I was 39 years old, living in my parents' basement, You know, I had gotten to my parents' basement because I was trying to get away from that ex-boyfriend that I was living with after I'd ran from my marriage. Still married, you know, living in my parents' basement, still just not being able to get it right, you know. And now, so in my thinking, you know, I'm doing good because I still got a good job, you know, and also kind of stuff. But, you know, when they said that it's an inside job, I mean, that just so ring bells inside of me that I knew that I didn't know what it was they were talking about, but I knew that what they were talking about was for me. It was for me, you know. And eventually, you know, I started to work the steps with sponsors who loved me, my network who loved me, you know, through all of this. And I started making amends to those people in my lives that I hurt, my ex-wife, you know, my daughter, whose life I was absent with. During that time, I was drinking and drugging and running the streets because I was in pain and hurt and all that kind of stuff, you know. And and when I got to the 11th step this time around, you know, the decision that I had to make was to adopt and to get married. Now, this is it. It's been this whole getting married thing again has been, for me, a bittersweet process, you know, because on one hand, you know, I can't forget when I was 17, when I walked in and saw her having sex with another guy. I can't forget that. And I'm trying not to let that spill over into this relationship, you know? And at the same time, my life has gotten really good, you know, on the inside and on the outside. And I met somebody who I don't necessarily advise everybody do, but we work together. And she's been over to my house. And I live in a very nice house in a very nice community and all that old kind of stuff. And my caution from past relationships with both males and females is that I am not sure if you are like me for me or if you like me for the stuff you see. I'm not sure. Now, on Christmas Day, I got engaged. I bought her a ring. She accepted. She Facebooked it to all her girlfriends and all that kind of stuff. And here we are from Christmas Day. It's April. And honest to God, and I'm so glad my friends are here in the room, I ain't sure. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. You know, and I got to be honest about the fact that I am not sure about two things. That's why I am glad that it's a long engagement, right? So that I can get to see who she is, but more importantly, I get to see who I am in this process, you know? Am I going to be able to be faithful? You know, and I don't know, but what I do know is that it's a one day at a time decision. It really is a one day at a time decision, you know. And since I've been at this convention, I had somebody to flirt with me, a guy to flirt with me last night after one of the workshops, and I liked it. I liked it. And because I liked the attention, it made me feel like I still got it, you know. Because I'm 51 years old, you know what I'm saying? and that's one of the things where my higher power just comes in. It, you know, when he does for me what I can't do for myself. That thing fell apart. It just fell apart. And I feel so good that it did. Because one more day, You know, I was able to say no because, see, I know how to take plays out in my relationships with guys. They don't last. It ain't no future. It's sex and it's peace. All right? On the inside of me, what I know about is that, Reggie, women, relationships with women are sustainable when you find the right one. If I find the right one, you know, it's a good thing, and I'm going to get favor, you know, comes along with that, you know. And so so I'm trying to make sure that I have found the right one, you know, and to hell with the fact that I bought a ring. You know what I'm saying? If it ain't the one, it ain't the one, and I'll just pay the bill and be done with it, and we'll work it out. You know what I'm saying? But I have got to give it a chance. I've got to give it a chance. Because I realize that I am broken. I am incapable of making a right decision all the time. I am incapable of doing that. I have a network of married men in my life who can guide me. I have married men who have good marriages to surround me. I do take advice and I listen to suggestions from my single friends, but I want somebody who got experience in making it work. That's who I want to talking in my ear, you know. And you know, I'm really feeling like on the inside of me that I don't really have a whole lot else to share, but I do know that the program of Narcotics Anonymous worked and it is working for me. You know, I'm gonna keep coming back. And thank y'all for letting me share.